In this video, we're going to look at how a tax consultancy and a law firm work. And I'm here with my partner and friend Mark, who has a firm of about 50 employees.
Right.
So we're going to work on it with the template, the business model. I always say that a business model, any business model, fits into this template. We have value creation, how that value is presented, what the client segment is, how sales are achieved, and how the service is delivered. So let's work on that. Let's start with value creation. What type of value do you create in your firm? How does that part work? We don't manufacture anything. It's a service that's based on knowledge and execution, right? So, basically, when our client needs to obtain residency in a country, we advise them and provide the service to obtain it. And when the client needs us to do their accounting or provide them with recurring services, well, we have the knowledge and execution to do it. So, value creation is based on people and knowledge, basically. In other words,
qualified people, so to speak, people with knowledge. What kind of knowledge do they need to know? Do they need to have a degree or, well,
in the consulting field, a degree may not be mandatory, but today most people have either business management or economics, or some higher degree, but in general we are talking about educated people. Then, obviously, within the production chain there are people with a more administrative profile who do not have that training, but who do have more practical knowledge, right? Sometimes, I always say the same thing. I prefer someone who has many years of knowledge of execution. Experience is more valuable to me than a degree in many cases. In other words,
we have lawyers. A tax specialist is a lawyer. A
tax specialist can be a lawyer or an economist. They can come from either branch. In other words, to be a good tax specialist, you need to have a degree in business administration and then a specialization. Or how does that work? In my case, I first studied business administration, then I did a master's specialization in taxation, and then I studied law. That is the most complete. Having 2 degrees in economics and law and a master's degree in
administrative specialization, right? Right. That would be a bit of the structure of the chain of people.
Okay, and then at the value proposition level, which is how you present the services, what types of services did you have? Did you have accounting services?
Right, that would be the advisory part, right? The more administrative part, so to speak. And then we would have legal or tax services, which depending on the client profile, are one or the other, right? I always separate relocation services, which are the services for I am a business person, I am an entrepreneur, I am a person with high purchasing power and I want to move to another country. We are very good at that, and then I do not separate the rest into these two modalities. There's also a very important point in the value proposition. We are a firm that speaks the digital language, right? And that is something that significantly differentiates us from the competition. Why? Because the first thing is that your lawyer understands you, right? We know what Hotmart is, we understand the digital language, e-commerce, we understand all of this very well. So, within our value proposition, apart from the second firm with experience, with exposure, we have that expertise in digital business that others don't have.
Okay. And one thing that interests me a lot is the part about the client segment. This when you present the business model, I think it's super interesting for those who know it, because you usually have front-end proposals, that is, what people offer first, right? And at the proposal level, you have the relocation part, right? Hey, someone wants to change their residence and says, hey, I want to go to Andorra or I want to go to Dubai. So you offer that service, but there's something very interesting about capturing that client through relocation, for example, to Andorra. But then accounting services are not what you offer directly most of the time. Instead, someone comes in and buys the offer to relocate to Andorra, and when they get here, the service is good. They've seen that you're reliable. Hey, you present your accounting services. Since I knew you were going to ask me this because it's one of the interesting points for me, I've been looking and 70% of accounting clients come from a previous relocation service. 70%, okay? And the remaining 30% are clients who change providers because they don't like the service or because they're looking for a value proposition that better suits their needs, for example, because of the whole digital thing, right? So, clients usually change when there's an error with their current provider or when they see that our office can offer them something that their current provider can't. But 70% comes from this cross-selling, right? From, I recruit you as a relocation client and then I sell you the service or the complete accounting and management package. Okay, something else that interests me is to understand well, because I understand accounting well, the services that they pay you a monthly fee approximately between how much and how much it goes. The average is around 320 euros, 130 euros. Okay, so there you have it. The accounting service is a very recurring business, right? In other words, it is stable. It is like the basis that gives you to be able to operate the company. Then the legal and fiscal aspects are more specific. Yes, I see the fiscal aspect as that entry ticket because, hey, you relocate someone and then you have a lot of services. The legal aspect, what is it? I mean, This is exactly what happens when someone has also joined you and has problems with what type of partnership agreement. Of course. I mean, I would tell you that the first thing is relocation, okay? Relocation is what allows you to go to Andorra, okay? Or to Dubai or to any jurisdiction, right? Because that is one point. Relocation allows you. I mean, I have a comprehensive service for Andorra and Dubai, okay? And for Spain. In fact, there are people who want to go to Spain. Although it may seem difficult to understand, there are people who like Spain and want to gain resilience in Spain, Andorra, Spain. Well, or anywhere in the world from Spain, okay? What is known as the Beckham Law. The expatriate regime is very interesting and many people from outside Spain come to Spain to enjoy its culture, its people, not its taxes, but all of this, right? Relocation comes first, the first service. I offer Andorra, Dubai and Spain in its entirety. But if you want to go to the Dominican Republic, Georgia or Cyprus, I have collaborators in each country who can help you get there, but I do not provide it directly. Once I relocate you to Spain, Dubai or Andorra, I have the second service which would be consulting, okay? There are two types of consulting. It would be 2.1, which would be accounting and tax management. I always say that it is not just accounting, because the tax team partly supports accounting. In other words, you don't pay a fee for a monkey to enter the invoice for you, but rather you pay a fee to receive a comprehensive support service, so that you have peace of mind, that you are complying with all obligations. Therefore, the legal and tax service also supports the accounting part. That's why I think the accounting account is very cheap for what it implies, but it sells very badly. We'll talk about this now, okay? When I'm a client there, I pay for it almost like insurance, also in addition to the accounting. In fact, if there are no problems, there are no problems. But sometimes I've received an email from your office saying, hey, have you taken this into account? Wow, how great. Look, something as absurd as, for example, data protection or privacy or real estate that you may like more or less, but you are obliged to keep it up to date. So, when a new law comes out, we keep an eye out for the publication of the official gazette every Wednesday, and when there is an obligation, we create a package and sell it to the client. For me, it's a sales move, but for the client, it's also a guarantee that they are complying with all obligations, right? Because that's the idea. So, once the client is hired and with us, we offer them tax, labor, accounting, and legal management. What is the legal part? Well, a client gets divorced, or a client wants to plan their will, or a client has a contractual problem with another provider. All of these are one-off services. In other words, I can't predict when my client will have a legal need, which makes it a non-recurring business and therefore one-off, and that has its good and bad points, okay? But I have, let's say, the management part is a recurring basis and the legal part is one-off services. Okay, perfect. And that's it. So, here's the ticket, normally the entrance ticket, and then you have the back part, right? And then I would have a third point, which would be the concentric part. The concentric part is other services that my client, apart from the management and legal services, may require from me. For example, I want to buy a property, okay? Hey, I need someone from human resources to find me, or I need some consulting that is outside our scope. We have the third point, concentric diversification. We have services that we offer on our own, such as real estate. We have our own real estate agency in Andorra that offers services to find you a property or to sell you a property. Now we have many clients who give us their property to sell it to them, right? Since we have many clients with high purchasing power, we try to find that defao, right? And then there are things that we don't. For example, well, I don't do occupational hazards. Occupational hazards, you know, are the companies that go to your facility and check that there is no risk to your workers. We don't do this ourselves, but we have a collaboration with a firm that does. So, our intention is to give you 360-degree service, not all internally, but sometimes with external providers. And before continuing with Mark's business model, I have a gift for you. HubSpot has sponsored this video and created a completely free resource on marketing and sales in Spain. This is a new report created in 2026 based on more than 800 calls with leaders and experts in marketing and sales. After all, sales, if you notice, is a very key part of a business model and is often the bottleneck. If you want to eliminate that bottleneck, this report will help you a lot. And I'm not just saying that, I've actually consumed it and it's amazing. So I'm going to leave this report completely free below in the first comment so you can download it and start unlocking that sales part. And again, thanks to HubSpot for bringing us these free gifts that I can bring you here in these videos. Now, let's continue with the board and the business model. Okay? I mean, here are some things that you have said, I'm going to integrate, so to speak, into the part that I do provide, such as real estate.
But you have made partnerships with strategic partners for everything that you don't reach, but here you do commission something.
Of course, there is an important point here, and that is when I decide to integrate and when not to. Okay, there are basically two factors. One is that I am capable of offering the service at the level and quality that I want to offer, which is above the market. If I am capable of this, I will integrate. If not, I won't. And there are times when I am capable, but the value of the product or service is so low that I am not interested. So it has to give me value, and I have to be able to do it perfectly or to a sufficient standard. For example, in real estate, we saw that we were capable of offering a service to a high standard. So, that's why we did it. Occupational hazards, well, I don't have a doctor on staff, right? It's not too much trouble for the margin it gives me, so I don't include it. Perfect. I think it's super expensive on the business side, which is where you capture, that is, this is like your initial offer and then you've been creating all that structure behind it. What's interesting is that initially when I started out on my own in a co-working space, it was like this, okay? But now we realize that, since we've already established a fairly important reputation, especially in the digital and business law areas, we have clients who come to us now. Not that we haven't captured them through relocation, but rather they are clients who are already in Andorra or they are Spanish clients who call us to say, "Hey, Mar, I have a conflict between partners, help me. Hey, Mark, I have an agreement that I have to draft very well. I want your legal team to help me." So, we're starting to sell services from point 2 and point 3 directly. It's probably because you've done this well too, that people have started to get a bit of attention here, right? Like, "Hey, you have a problem, you do this very well, you see with them that they'll be able to solve it for you." Quote, exactly. So, 2.1, which is the management part, has a good part which is recurrence, it has a bad part which is the perception of value. I think it's either because we don't know how to sell it or because the client perceives it as low value. But the price we're charging today for management is the same price I charged in 2013 when I arrived in Andorra. In other words, there's a huge problem of scalability of perceived value. Why do you think this is? Well, because I think that when you offer sales, the client sees the return very automatically. They say, "Man, sell me, I pay you a commission and I get a return." Here, what the client sees is that legal obligations are being met, but it's more of a hassle. I mean, nobody likes paying a manager, but it's necessary and a bad manager can really mess things up. So I'm going for the security part, man. I mean, if you want to be calm and focus on your business, delegate the management part to a serious, reputable firm. And that's my slogan, so to speak, but I see that the perception of value is increasingly lower or stagnant. It's true that we now have better technology than 10 years ago, so that technology in principle allows you to reduce costs. But in the case of Andorra, that's not entirely true because what I save in personnel costs due to the technology I implement, personnel has become more than 100% more expensive. Okay, so, of course, I need human resources, yes or yes, and that human resource is sometimes more expensive. So, if I'm not able to increase the price of the service, I have a problem. And here, for example, perhaps another thing that could happen to you is that people compare and it's very standardized. I mean, you can say, "Hey, this is management and that's it." But people say, "Wow, but if someone else does it for 100, quote,
"Sure,
sure." The problem is that it doesn't have all that fiscal part behind it. I mean, there are no people who say, "No, I'll get a friend of mine or someone who's an accountant to do it for me." Look, there are two things here. One, sometimes there are firms that offer accounting services for 150 euros per month, which is half of what we do, less than half, but then they charge you for everything separately. So when you do the average and calculate the entire cost, we are actually around 250 euros, 300 euros. So, there's not a big difference in Andorra in terms of management. In Spain, there is. In Spain, there are much cheaper and more economical providers. What is the difference? The difference is the peace of mind and security that comes from being with a leading firm and the entire legal and tax team behind it that supports this service. At Abast, apart from this, what we have done is create a community. So in Andorra, for example, we have a community called Avast Investing. Access to certain contacts, which is an added value that is not related to the service, but indirectly provides additional value. I can attest to that. Well, you also hold events, these types of things. That for people who are also new and also come in.
Very well within the value equation, overall.
Let's move on to the customer segment, and how you get the sale. I always say that one of the main mistakes entrepreneurs make is to think that they are going to build something and that sales will come on their own when that is not usually the case. In your case, what is the main customer segment that you target and how do you manage to sell to them? Let's see. My clients all have one thing in common and that is that or the vast majority is that they are attracted by my sales director, who is Pedro Sanchez. In other words, Pedro Sanchez makes very burdensome policies in Spain and makes many people want to change countries and this is the common feature that they want to change to a country with more attractive taxation, okay? So, from here I have people of 70 years old, people of 25 years old, digital business, traditional business, families, individuals. There is no exact customer avatar. What is true is that from what I was telling you about the specialty of digital business, we have a lot of clients in the digital sphere. Why? Because a traditional client can choose between several firms, A digital client has fewer options, and for that reason, we overweight clients with a digital profile. That would be a bit of the reading. And in terms of sales, you've always told me that your bottleneck is that it costs you almost nothing to acquire a client because you have enormous demand. You're
in a sector with incredible demand, but you also have a small problem, and that is that you depend on regulations, at least in Andorra. In other words, if Andorra cuts off the tap and doesn't let people in,
you have a player in a country that could hinder your business. Of course, here I'd like to recap a bit when I launched the project 5 years ago, right? My main concern is, okay, I know how to do my job, I have a good value proposition, but I don't know if they're going to buy it. That was my concern when I decided to start up, right? That concern was resolved in a month, because in a month, I realized that if you give yourself a good value proposition, word of mouth actually works very well, okay? So I did that over delivery, that maximum delivery, and the client said, wow, it's cheaper and it's better than the competition. So, that's where I got a very large sales flow. Okay? Now, as you rightly point out, my problem isn't sales, but my problem is getting enough professional equipment to maintain and be able to offer services for all the demand we have, okay? Your bottleneck, because in the end a business without a bottleneck would scale to hundreds of millions, right? So you always reach a point where there's a bottleneck.
For many people, it's usually sales. This isn't a problem for you. For you, the big problem is this. In fact, there are people thinking, hey, how do we make this bill 50 million? No, that's kind of the idea I like to raise. I have two problems. The first problem is the staff bottleneck. I need more people trained to be able to serve
customers, and those trained people have to provide quality service, and when you grow, now that we're almost 50, quality of service, standardizing it, is very complicated, and I see that, well, delivery, it's not as good as what I could initially offer when I was alone, when there were four of us, and that's something that has to be accepted, but it also has to be solved in part, right? And then I have another problem, which is that hiring people in Andorra is difficult and expensive due to the social and economic situation. As a result, I can't offer services to a lot of people who want to hire me, like, I don't know, freelancers in Spain. A freelancer in Spain wants to hire me, but can't afford to pay 350 euros for an accounting fee. They can pay 150 euros. So, there are providers who offer it for 150 euros and that client, that avatar goes with that provider. But if I were able to find a way to use my human and technological resources to offer services at 150 euros per client, I could scale to 50 million euros without any problem. With the same business, that is, bringing people to Andorra and with the backend.
Right, with consulting services in Spain. Remember that Andorra is a market and now we're entering the regulation you mentioned. Andorra is a small market. We opened in Barcelona. Why? Okay, wait before you start pissing yourself out of Barcelona because this is Andorra we're talking about. Okay.
In Andorra I can't use 50 million, it's impossible.
Okay, I mean, your bottleneck in Andorra is still personnel.
Because there aren't that many people here. I mean, there aren't that many people, and if you want to bring people in you have to pay a lot because rents have gone up and all that stuff.
Exactly.
If we could solve the personnel bottleneck, the next bottleneck we would encounter would be demand. Right? I mean, you're serving people with high purchasing power who have to pay 50,000 euros down payment, etc., etc., etc. I mean, first of all, if we solved it in Andorra we would reach, I don't know, what? 5 million, a
demand ceiling, 5 million.
5 million. So, if you already anticipated this, that this was quite an interesting move, you said, hey, I'm going to open in Barcelona. So, you've already opened an office in Barcelona.
Sure.
And in Dubai, right. The issue here is when we realized that Andorra was a jurisdiction that had a volume cap. Andorra has 90,000 inhabitants. The arrival of people to Andorra is going to be restricted, and in fact the legislator is already changing laws to increasingly hinder the arrival, which I can understand. So, I realized two things. One, there's a cap in the jurisdiction, it's small, and two, all the regulations from now on are going to work against us, so there is a country risk. If you do the SWOT analysis, there's not a very big threat. So, what did we say? Okay, for two reasons. One, there's a very big threat. Two, where do I have more influence or where is my reputation stronger? In Spain. What market does Spain have? 48 million inhabitants. Well, if I have the knowledge, I have the reputation and I have the capacity, let's open Barcelona. So, that was the first move we made last year and the results are very good. Why? Because we have a small team, at the moment, we are growing, there are 6 of us now, and we offer a quality service and the client is willing to pay for it. But in Andorra, I think what happens is that people come, compare suppliers and you appear among the top 3 and you get the client. Right.
In Spain, there is incredible demand. Even so, it's been a while since we started Spice and Fortuna. You started doing media, you've also appeared in videos with Wall Street Wolverine. That personal brand was what gave you the confidence to say, now I do think I have more demand outside of Andorra. Quote, absolutely, absolutely. In short,
I have two very important pillars. The first is technical, based on knowledge and reputation. I'm a master's professor, an experienced person with some recognition in the academic world. The second is the media aspect. This media presence gives me the confidence to say, okay, I'm a product that competes, but not on equal terms. Because when comparing suppliers, I used to be just another commodity. Now I'm Marc Jorge from Abast, and people pay to work with us. That's why Barcelona has also been successful, I believe.
Personal branding not only creates more demand, it doesn't just influence this area, but I think it can also influence this one. You get better staff precisely because they want to work with you.
This is very important. It's not just better technical staff, but more motivated staff. In other words, these are people who, when they join the project, are excited to join our project, right? I mean, think about how historically I have competed with big firms, and when a lawyer graduates from law school, they want to work at Quatrecoches, Gorillas, Urea, which are the three main firms in terms of size and reputation. But now a group of people, very young lawyers, are starting out and saying, no, no, I don't want to go to those firms, I want to go to AS. And that is something that is extremely valuable to me. Obviously, it is not the vast majority, but the vast majority are still, in some way, excited about the big F and the big firms, but there is a very interesting segment of staff who are highly motivated. And along these lines, one of the points we are working on, and which I have already explained to you on other occasions, is the Avis media part. It is trying to empower the team through media so that working at Avis is even more attractive, and that is based on creating content with them. Super cool. Well,
I think that's where you have the gold mine, because you transfer your personal brand, your authority, to the people who want to work with you. You give them all the resources to also create this personal brand and reputation, and as long as they stay with you, this continues to grow.
Of course, right now I have two business objectives, okay? The first objective is the management part, and that is to increase the perceived value.
Yes, that's
key for me, because in this way, if I manage to increase recurring income by 10%, that's a lot of money in absolute terms. Okay? And the second point is what I want to do is also increase talent acquisition. Okay? Because if I manage to increase the perceived value, but I don't increase talent acquisition, the service, the perceived value actually falls. It falls because you can sell something very well, but then if the execution is not as good, it doesn't work. So, I need to have more talent, better in order to have a higher received value. How am I going to do it? Selling it well, explaining what it includes. It's not an accounting account, it's 250, no, no. The comprehensive monthly advisory service for your peace of mind is 400. I mean, that's kind of the idea, right? And for the people who are already paying you for the old service, how do you plan to increase it? We update the fees every year. Every year we do a review and an update based on the CPI, the minimum. Or I explain to my client, look, my personnel costs are increasing, I have to increase your fee. If you want to compare with other providers, do it, but I can't keep a client depending on their prices, okay? So, to attract talent, which is the second thing, we are working very hard on the Abyss media part.
Okay.
Because for me that is the key. And then, aside from that, the next point is the legal side, the law firm side, which is the part that I lead. In this case, I don't manage the management side, but I do manage the legal side. What we also want to do is increase the perceived value, but in this case based on authority, okay? In the legal sector, authority is achieved through success. So, when you achieve success, the market perceives you as a better provider. This is the American way, right? The typical lawyer who appears in the press, who takes on a complicated case, wins, that's how it goes. Yes, but with the ontological limitation, so to speak, that a lawyer can't do active advertising. I mean, Better Call Saul in Spain, you can't do it in Andorra. I can't plaster the subway with photos of myself from Hire Me.
Yes, but it's not necessary, of course.
Because you already have it. I mean, you have media, you've created your own media. Personal branding in this case is very important.
You can explain the podcast to us, you can explain it in your own media. I mean, now that you're going to create the entire media studio, this is also a move that I think is brutal because,
as you say, your competitors have something that you don't have, which is more time, more reputation, more name, but I don't think they're going to do this, at least not now. I mean, I think you have a margin of about 10 years.
To create all this. And when they realize it, it'll be too late.
Exactly. I also tell you, I have to say that in the last 2 years I've focused a lot on this part, on the third part, on the concentric part.
Those added services, etc.
Sure, but it's what I explained in the podcast the other day. In the end, this vertical could give me 30,000 euros already. But if I were to dedicate the time I've dedicated to this to improving this, these two.
These are the same as 300,000 euros, that's...
Where I see that perhaps I've misused my time. Or something as simple as stopping doing it in-house, that is, stopping doing it in-house and looking for a partner. Sure, and hey, but almost without thinking about what you earn, just by providing more service to that person.
Sure, but the point, for example, the real estate part is going very, very well for me. Well, that's not to touch it.
Not to touch it, but the part of the partners, I mean, in the end the decision is, hey, do I want to open this vertical, yes or no? We study it, yes. Okay, how do we open it? Alone or accompanied? Alone. We have to hire people for work. Accompanied, we have to choose the partner. And choosing the partner is also something complicated. It's regulating your relationship with them. Make the right choice. Damn, it's not easy, right? So, what we're doing now is, okay, we've validated some concentrics, we'll keep these, we won't. These are out. And we'll now focus on the core, on management and on the legal side. As well, listen, to summarize, so that people understand, your plan to continue scaling up is basically going to be Andorra. Leave it as it is, which is probably what will reach 5 million, work on the personal brand, take it to Ba Media so that, I understand that this means that when people think about working at Avis, they don't just think about working at Avis, but they think, wow, they're even giving visibility to the best tax specialists. My goal. I suppose the goal in joining one of these big Fs is to end up becoming a partner. Here, apart from that, perhaps becoming a partner is also to end up having the personal brand.
That is, having that reputation and that renown.
Sure, and also, and here I appeal to statistics. The percentage of those who join large or big four firms who end up becoming partners is very small. I mean, the most normal thing is that you leave in the fifth, sixth, seventh year. So, I think that in this paradigm shift with this new generation, the disruption of alternative firms with personal brands, with a different approach to the traditional one, I think they have quite a long way to go and, that's why, we want to work a lot on the media part, because many people still don't know us. I mean, many people know us through the media. But there are many people who still don't.
Of course.
So, that's an important point. So, in the end, in terms of and to summarize, we want to attract the best talent to provide the best service. Why? To solve client problems through a slightly higher accounting, tax, and labor consulting management fee, offering an hourly rate because in legal, tax, and accounting we operate on a billable hourly basis at a higher hourly rate than we currently have. And here is a point that cannot be solved in the short term. But that may be in the long term, and that is whether we are able to offer a management service at a price of 150 euros per hour or 150 euros per month. For Spain, if we are able to offer a service in Spain for 150 euros per month, we have a market that could reach 50 million euros. That is the reading. But of course, this part requires a technological component, a much superior infrastructure and a large investment in time and money, which is what we are working on in the medium term. And I also see that you started strong with real, that is, people also understand that a business model changes over time, right? The main business model was relocation and back-end services. But seriously, you have hit a ceiling and the next ceiling will be, hey, that people who are in Spain do not come directly through relocation, they come directly through core services. That is why, for me there are two businesses. Relocation is a business that involves selling the other business, but then there's legal, accounting, tax and employment consulting, which is a separate business and we don't need relocation to get there. And in fact we've fallen behind in Spain and there's been quite a significant lag. I mean, think about it, in quantitative terms, I don't know if you've gone into numbers, but we're talking about a turnover of 1 million from this relocation and a turnover of 2.3 to 2.4 million from consulting currently. More or less a margin of
33% to 30%.
Super good. Of course, the point where I have the smallest margin and where I have the highest operating cost is in management because, as the fee received is very low and the labor cost is very high, my margins are narrowed. So, what I have to do is reduce my costs with technology, and technology, you're talking about software, AI, etc., we're already working on it, With technology, we reduce labor costs, because one person can handle more accounts, so to speak, and through complimentary services and excellent customer service, increase perceived value. That's the strategy of the management and legal teams. Reputation, reputation, reputation. Working well. If you work well, you can increase your fees.
Reputation can also go down. In other words, you have to select the person very carefully. In other words, if you lose cases, you'll be noticed.
Without a doubt, we, more than cases, because litigation is a discipline that we don't deal with much, although we could, but I'm of the opinion that if you're not very good at something, it's better to leave it to someone else, because for me, handling a civil litigation matter, for example, is very difficult. It takes a lot of time, I have to invest a lot of time and, on top of that, the output is not the best. So, for that, I refer it to a partner who does civil litigation and that's it, right? So, for me, reputation is not just about being able to go down, but also about going up the stairs and down the elevator. In other words, reputation is very hard to build and it is lost very quickly.
Okay.
So, as in any business, we operate with thousands of clients. Just think that, in order to implement the idea of relocation, we have brought thousands of people to Andorra, thousands, not hundreds, thousands of people to Andorra. So, of course, the end result is always good because we have never had a case where things have gone badly, right? But there are failures along the way, there are communication errors, there are problems with communication, that happens and there are clients who leave angry, well, they leave angry, but with the result obtained. In other words, maybe the result was not as fast as they expected or the result was not the service they expected, but with the result obtained. Of course, because people who understand it, a service business has nothing to do with a product business, whether physical or digital, because there is nothing to do with it. Yeah, you can have standards and processes, but human error can always happen. There always are. And then there are very demanding client profiles. There are clients whose lives have saved and then they get angry and leave the office because of something silly. That's happened, and I always say the same thing. I say, damn, you have a problem. I mean, I'm not saying this for myself. I don't really care about me, but you shouldn't choose your provider based on details. You should choose your provider based on the most important thing, which is your peace of mind and security. So, I'm sure that our service is good, but if you make a mistake, your reputation goes downhill. So, that's why it's very important for the team to have a large enough team and, above all, to have the opportunity to hire more people. Because if someone is only half-heartedly performing and you have no choice, you have two options, either half-heartedly performing or reducing your number of clients. As a business person, this is a decision that I find difficult, but in order to avoid losing reputation, it's a decision that I would suggest to many people. I mean, maybe it's better to serve fewer people and better than more and worse. And it's something that if I'm not able to find the right staff, I'll also consider reducing and serving less. Okay, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, the future is clear and what you've achieved so far is spectacular. So very cool. Before finishing, I don't recommend anyone to open a consultancy, okay? I mean, don't even think about opening a consultancy to anyone, please. It's not a very, very demanding business. It's a business that, and also with the size we have of 40 and over, has a problem and that is that I'm still in the operations. So, what happens? That when a professional does something wrong or something bad, no, something that the client perceives may be wrong, the client contacts me. Let's also talk about the issue of equity, because you don't, you have partners, I mean, you started with 100% equity, I started with 100% equity, but after a short time I incorporated three strategic partners, I mean, three partners who offered what I couldn't offer. Okay, and how much did you give to that? I mean, Mark, how much do you have in the business now?
I have 67%. 67.
Yes, and then I have three partners with 10% each.
Okay, and Sergi with 3%. Sergi, a crypto lawyer. Yes, with 3% who joined later. He
joined 3 years later. Okay, and you do this, I mean, you lost, because it's difficult, right? Losing part of your company, but in a service business. You consider it even better because of course, I understand it too, I mean, in a product.
Yeah, yeah.
But here they are people who the service or how you like to operate. Look, I think that when I lost the equity that I lost, I didn't lose it, I invested it first. Sure. I think that at the time I granted this equity I didn't have in mind that we could get to where we are now. But it's deceitful to say that if I had known that I wouldn't have given so much equity. It's very deceitful. And many people, no, I don't want to lose equity. Look, I'd rather have 67% of this thing than 100% of something that bills a million. And I think that without having made this move I wouldn't have made it.
I wouldn't have made it.
That even with an aid I would have joined, yes. But these people left their jobs to come with me. So, I also understand that if I say, hey, I'm crazy, I want to start a business in this sector, and I tell you, hey, quit your job at a multinational and sell it, it's because they are qualified people, that's what we say, they're not just college kids, I mean, they're people who, hey, they provide a service, they contribute something to the business, and it's important because I had worked with all three of them for years, so I knew them, I had a good friendship, I knew what value I wanted from each of them. So, of course, my advice is not to give it up lightly, but also not to keep it out of greed because many people don't just don't want to give equity lightly, they want to keep it out of greed. And sometimes I see businesses that have ridiculous revenue, with a lot of potential already, but ridiculous at the moment and that are stagnant because they don't give equity. In my case, I consider myself very generous with the equity at the time, but the results have been quite good. So, I don't think about the 33% that I'm losing, I think about the 67% that I'm gaining. I think that's the right mindset. I also tell you, with a shareholders agreement, with conditions, with a buyback option on my part, in case something doesn't go well or in case one of them retires. They're professional partners. That's what it means, because there are many people who see this and say, hey, I'm so scared that I give 10% to a partner and after a year they say, that's it. And they start taking the money for life. I have an agreement that says that if any of my partners stops working, I keep their equity. In other words, the equity is directly conditioned. The equity is conditioned on these people continuing to work. If they don't work, obviously. And if they work half-time or you want to get rid of it because it stopped performing, how is that valued? Let's see. Here are two options. Or in the shareholders agreement you establish that there are certain grounds for requisition, for example, poor performance. But there, the problem you have is that you will say that he performs poorly and he will say no. And a judge will have to decide if there is sufficient evidence, that even if it is not an employment relationship because it is a commercial one, but anyway, the burden of proof falls on whoever wants to exercise that option or directly state that, at the dissection of the founding partner, which would be me, I can require whenever I want. That requires trust on the part of the professional partner, but it gives you the maximum authority or the maximum capacity for requisition, which is what I would recommend. If you have put up the money, you have risked your assets and you have launched the project and you bring in a new partner, I would opt for that route, the route of really being able to require if you consider it. In other
words, it is almost like a 10% bonus because the moment you say, hey, you are not coming to work, it is over. Quote, shareholder agreements also allow you to put the good liver bad lure in it's, hey, if I want to buy you back because I feel like it, I'll pay you fair compensation for your percentage, for example, one evidence for five.
Okay. And there are others that if you're bad, if you've done something wrong and we can prove it, I'll buy you nominal. So, before giving my baby equity, I would regulate all this very well, which is what it says at the time. Very good. Well, I think we have it. Thanks for being the first in this new format, Mark. And if you want to, you know, work with them, we'll also leave you the links to everything they have out there, which I tell you is an incredible firm. And if you like this format, let me know and I'll see you in the next one. Have a good time.